Mitch Daniels says no to a run for president. What's behind the decision? What's next for the governor and what's not? Fraud charges at FSSA, a Supreme Court protest, Indy 500 picks and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 27, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Mitch Daniels said no to a run for president. The governor released his decision in an email to supporters sent out in the middle of the night on Saturday night. He then stayed out of the public view for 2 days before surfacing to say that the decision was based on family concerns, but not necessarily a fear of scrutiny.
There was way too much attention paid here to this scrutiny business. Don't forget just the total loss of privacy. I mean, think of my, I've got three daughters just early in their married lives. You know, think about the disruption of that it would have meant. So, yeah, sure, the scrutiny, but, you know, this is not the only scar tissue I've got by now.
And the governor referring to 20 stitches in his forehead there. More on that later. Was the Daniels decision a surprise? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Nikki Kelly, State House Bureau Chief for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and John Ketzenberger, President of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, did you get the idea that Daniels wanted to run?
Well, that's certainly what he's the impression he's putting out there. And if you were a supporter of his, you would say, if this was going to be a showstopper, why wasn't it a showstopper last year? You get the clear impression that he was very, very, very anxious to run and had the operation shut down. And, you know, I mean, it's a little ungracious. I mean, if he's concerned about his family, and you have to take what he says at face value, that he is concerned, the family didn't want to do it, what you say is something like, well, in my judgment, this isn't the time for my family to make a national run. It's just too much strain, et cetera, rather than putting all the onus off on them. I thought, frankly, that was kind of awkward.
You thought he was going to run.
I did.
I would like to point out, by the way, that of this group, I was the only one who said he wasn't going to run.
Oh, wait a minute.
You all hedged your bets. I didn't.
No. I actually did think he was going to run because over the last few weeks, I mean, some of the statements he made where he talked about the differences between how you approach early primaries versus middle primaries. I mean, clearly he'd been thinking about this.
How well his brand of politics would work in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Absolutely, and a number of governors who made comments about, you know, they were going to be supportive. And I did talk to the governor about this decision. I told him how disappointed I was, as a lot of Republicans were. And it's what he said it was. It was about his family. His family did not want to do this. I think he did want to do this. I think he would have won this nomination. And I think he would have been a great competitor in the final scheme of things. But it's not going to happen. But, you know, we're all disappointed, and we'll wait and see what happens from here.
So here we are, 5 days later. CNN puts out a poll today that shows Rudy Giuliani, who hasn't indicated that he's going to do this, as the number one Republican. I mean, that explains, if nothing else does, why Mitch Daniels was getting so much pressure.
Yeah, I mean, and he brings a pretty impressive record. Obviously, there were things you could have argued during his tenure, but I think everyone was really excited to see him on the trail, and no one has really, I guess, impressed everyone or blown everyone else away, no other Republican candidate. And so I think he was really interested in doing it, and I think a lot of people are sad that he didn't.
Were you surprised?
No, I was on the 50-50 kind of trail. I mean, I was surprised that it happened that day. You know, I mean, I went to bed not knowing, and so.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of the idea of sending an email out in the middle of the night on a Saturday night? That tells me that this was an emotional decision, and he didn't want to be confronted about it for a little bit.
Well, I think you're absolutely right about that. Sending out emissaries to the newspaper here in town to break the news
in embargoed fashion
while he was off at a fundraiser for Senator Lugar does tell me exactly what you suggest, that he made the decision, but he didn't really want to confront it yet. And as it was, it took a couple of days, which was probably a good idea, to let it settle, to get comfortable with the idea that he wasn't in the race, and then to talk about it after the fact. So I'm sure that this really did weigh heavily on the governor, and that it was an agonizing decision to make.
Still with this now, if Mitch Daniels, is he out of the 2012 picture completely? Supporters and others already suggest that he's on the list of potential GOP running mates. The governor calls it a crazy hypothetical.
I don't have anything to say about it. It's just so far-fetched, and there's just, next to zilch chance that the question would ever even be presented. So I'm not going to spend any time worrying about it.
Mike McDaniel, will family considerations be different if the campaign is for vice president?
Well, I don't think there's any questions that it is different. One, it's a whole nother year that you don't have to put yourself through the campaign grind, because it'll be July, August before anybody even brings up a short list of names for who the Republican nominee will pick. So that shortens it up. The scrutiny level that you get for a vice presidential candidate is way different than what you get for a candidate for president. So you don't have a lot of the same things.
Is the privacy level different?
I think it is. I think there's a huge difference there. And I think that he will be considered by a Republican nominee as a potential vice presidential candidate. Now, whether or not he would want to do that, I have no idea. But I think that he will definitely be considered. I see him playing a role at the national convention. And a major speaking role there. I think a lot of this has to do with how his book's perceived when it comes out this fall. If he's as honest about facing the problems of this nation head on, like he says he's going to be in this book, that may be an eliminating factor for a lot of things about whether or not somebody might be interested in him or not. But there are a lot of considerations here, but I wouldn't rule out either a vice presidential bid, a cabinet post if you have a Republican president, or other opportunities.
Okay, so the students for Daniels, the organization that started at Yale that now has 60 chapters nationwide, today changed the name of their organization. They're now the Students for Solvency, and they won't commit to another candidate. And they say that once the nominee is picked, they will begin a chapter of Students for Daniels for Vice President or Treasury Secretary. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, I'm sure he's flattered by that. He ought to be flattered by that. Mike's right about the level of scrutiny being a little lower. And, I can see him adding some intellectual heft to a ticket, a Palin-Daniels ticket or a Bachman-Daniels ticket. He could add a lot.
We call that faint praise.
Yeah. That's just damning, that's all. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we got to talk about who the candidate's going to be
first. That's a good question.
And then the question is, does he want to be on that Titanic?
Right.
That's a question, too.
Man, tell me this. These Students for Solvency all of a sudden, I mean, they're going to try to keep carrying his message. Does he have an influence on the race if he doesn't become part of a ticket?
Yes. The answer is absolutely yes. And I think, Mike mentions the book. I think that the book could become kind of the roadmap, if you will, for the Republican message when it comes to budgetary matters, the deficit, those kinds of things. And I think that the governor will have influence regardless of what role he may or may not take. I personally have a hard time seeing him as a vice presidential candidate because he is such a strong CEO type. But I could see him in a cabinet leading a major branch of government. And having a lot of say in that.
He did great in the budget office.
He's been there. He's been there. He's done that. That's part of the problem. But look, he's got a lot of support around the country, which is why he would still be a major player. They had almost, I know this for a fact, they had almost every governor, Republican governor, ready to endorse him. They were probably going to announce the biggest war chest going into a presidential campaign that anybody's ever had. I mean, so he's got a lot of support out there. So
the nominee is going to be
interested.
He's going to have
and having influence. Him bring those kind of resources with him to a ticket.
Yeah.
Could you see him as a cabinet officer?
Yeah, I could definitely see it. His kids are older and they're all moved away. So, you could move out to Washington and not really cause a problem for the family, you know, majorly. I could definitely see it. And I also think the reason he's not really shutting the door is that it makes his message even more potent still. I mean, he can still sort of do the whole maybe I will, maybe I won't, so you should listen what I have to say thing.
That was the thing that I always thought was going on here to begin with, was that he was using this talk as a way to remain relevant when you're typically a lame duck. It's the same calculation when it comes to this. And the governor is a master politician, and he's done a great job of maintaining leverage at a time when most other politicians can't.
Now that he's not going to do this, I told him today, actually, that I'm for him to be the next commissioner of baseball.
Yeah, there you go.
I've been to the White House, but I haven't been to the World Series yet.
I've been to the World Series. He's a big Dodger fan.
Well, they have to get
I once
first.
Asked yeah. the governor how he felt about Pete Rose, and he wasn't very excited to answer that.
Yeah, he's got some strong feelings about baseball. We mentioned the bandage on his forehead. He got 20 stitches in his forehead after getting hit by a swinging door at the National Institute of Fitness and Sport. Interestingly
there's
enough,
a moral in that someplace.
Well, and then this same week, Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard broke a bone in his wrist falling off a bicycle.
It reinforces your lifestyle. Stay on the couch
yeah,
and
this
keep
exercise,
the remote under control.
I completely agree with that.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, are you disappointed by the decision Mitch Daniels made? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, it doesn't affect me. Last week's question was, would you vote for Mitch Daniels for president? 65% said yes. 4% said it depends on the choices available. 31% said never. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The governor turned his focus back to state government just in time to be greeted by a case of fraud. Three government employees are charged with stealing money meant for families in need. U.S. Attorney Joe Hogsett announced the charges against people who work for the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration. Prosecutors say they created fake benefit cards, or EBT cards, in the names of 100 different people. Then they used the cards to withdraw money from ATMs, or in some cases sold the cards. The trio who is accused took nearly $200,000. One of the suspects, Timberly Snyder, was an administrator. The other two, Adina Lopez and Robert Edwards, were caseworkers. Lopez is the only one who still works for the state. All three pleaded not guilty in federal court. John Ketzenberger, is this one of those problems that Mitch Daniels promised to eliminate?
Well, you know, that's something that's always a concern, and the answer is yes. You know, $200,000 fraud is a major case, but you always wonder when you have these kinds of electronic cards. They're increasingly being used. They're still trying to work out ways to make sure that they don't get used fraudulently. Unemployment benefits are delivered this way. I think it's something they have to be very diligent about, and it's something that you have to keep a lot of oversight on. So, I'm glad they brought the case, and I hope they keep an eye on it.
Is this, the governor said when he ran that every garden needs weeding every 16 years or so. Will this come back on him?
Probably not a lot. I mean, he did say it during the campaign. He was very critical of employees who had been arrested. But to me, it's no different than exactly what it was back then, which is the system caught them. And now they're being prosecuted, and that's the proper thing to do. So.
He wants credit. He says state government actually found
this
case.
Well, it was an internal investigation that found it. And once they found out it involved food stamps, then they turned it over to the feds, which is how it got to Joe Hogsett's attention. So if found guilty, they should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, and I think he'd be all for that.
This happens as there's a big dispute over how FSSA should be run. There was an effort to privatize it with IBM that's now in the courts. Would this seem to be related to that in any way?
I don't think it's necessarily related to it, and I'm glad they had the internal controls to find it. I kind of wonder why it took $200,000 in theft, but, you know, with 35,000 state government employees, on any given day, you can be sure that a half a dozen of them are not doing what they're supposed to do. So the idea that you can eliminate this any more than any mayor running says that he's going to eliminate crime is laughable. You just have to keep the internal controls in place and catch it as fast as you can and then act you know, quickly.
Well, that's why aggressive oversight by a prosecutor, whether it's the federal prosecutor
right,
in this case
thing.
Or the local prosecutor, is a good thing. And we really haven't seen a lot of that until recently. So I hope that the prosecutors will keep an eye on these kinds of things because it's important for, you know, the public's trust.
It's also important that all the other of the 36,000 state employees, like in any operation, know that there's somebody out there watching,
this
isn't found money.
That's right.
But he managed to make this a political issue in 2004, used it against Joe Kernan. Is this a political problem for Mitch Daniels?
Well, he's not running again.
Well, for starters, there seemed to be a whole lot more frequency of these kind of problems back then than there are now.
Well,
This is way down compared to what we dealt with over the previous administration.
$200,000 is not way down.
The dollar amount may be, but the instances of fraud in government was
all over the place. Well, no, it was not all over
the
place. It's the same then as it is now.
No, it's not.
On any given day, you got half a dozen, but $200,000 does raise eyebrows.
There was a rally at the State House this week to urge the recall of State Supreme Court Justice Stephen David. The protesters object to a ruling authored by David that upheld the police authority to enter a home in Evansville during a domestic dispute, a ruling that has been criticized by the governor, legislative leaders, in addition to the attorney general. Justice David is on the ballot next year.
He's already on the record as being a justice that will not stand up for our rights. We need to be appointing and supporting justices that will.
That's rally organizer Jeff Haug. Nikki Kelly, is Justice David in trouble?
I don't think so. I think this is one of those things that's maybe going to rile everyone up, and then by 2012 people might forget. And also, we don't know if they'll rehear the case and whether that will change. Also, I did look back, and there's been no time in the history that we have not retained a justice in the state. So I think the odds are probably in his favor.
And there was, in Randy Shepard's case, there was an organized effort to try to keep him from being retained at one point. So, I mean, a single case?
Well, first of all, I agree with Nikki that, you know, a single case is not likely to doom the judge's retention ability to be retained. But also a little more troubling is, you know, you can disagree with the judge's decision, and I happen to disagree with his decision. But, you know, to try to threaten him, to take him out, is the wrong approach. I think, you know, the attorney general has said, we won the case, but we disagree with the outcome, so we want to go back through and have another review. That's the way it should be. I think you have to defer to the governor's judgment and the process which puts these people in place. It is very purposeful, and unless something really untoward goes on, a criminal act or something like that, then I don't see why you wouldn't want to retain these justices.
The governor says this ruling is a problem because there's a 2006 statute that wasn't considered that should have solved the problem here.
Look, the decision is the right decision. I disagree with you on that. What you've got here, I mean, are they actually going to hold this guy up who threatens his wife and then attacks the police as a poster child? The common law right of protecting your home from unlawful entry dealt with people who could be incarcerated for a year before a magistrate ever got to see them or did anything with them or gave them bail. They could be tortured. None of that's the case. You won't know if you have a lawful entry till the case, in some cases, goes to the U.S. Supreme Court 5 years later. Law enforcement officers put their lives on the line enough, and domestic violence situations are particularly vulnerable to having law enforcement officers injured. You know, he gets arrested and something happens and it's unlawful, the evidence is suppressed. And he has a civil rights action against the police department. That's the way it ought to be. You don't take it into your own hands and you don't resist law enforcement.
The question now, though, I think, is should this go back to the court or should the legislature solve this?
Mike Young is going to propose something. That outstanding legal scholar.
Or should they both address it?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to find out if the Supreme Court does take it on. First of all, it was a 3-2 decision, and all of this aimed at one justice is pretty amazing to me in its own right, which is kind of silly, really. But and I also agree that the 911 call, because of the domestic violence question, gave him a right to go into this house, and I think the Attorney General agrees with that, basically.
So are the two dissenting
opinions. And I think everybody thinks that that's the right thing to do. But look, the question is, how do you do this? Because the Supreme Court is not allowed to change things based on public opinion. At least it says that. in the statute. So I don't know. I think they will revisit it. If they don't, you can assure that the legislature is going to deal with this, because you've got Republicans and Democrats calling for this change.
They will, but should they?
Well, I don't like changing the way judges are picked. I think a statewide election is a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of having the Senate confirmation would be put us in the same situation here in Washington,
but just in
which
this
is
case,
also a disaster.
It seems like there should be some clarification.
They should at least clarify the 2006 law
whether
it applies to police or not, because there's not a specific exemption in there in the no retreat law. So they at least at a minimum need to.
They
do
can
that.
Do that, right. And they will do that if nothing happens.
And that's fine. But the idea, I mean, first of all, the idea, I think Nikki's exactly right, that you make a scapegoat of one individual and you threaten him, as John said, because you don't like the opinion.
I think that's what I said.
Well, John said it first, so I was getting done. Is outrageous. And the other thing about it is that we have so much violence in this country right now. And I can just see if there's some affirmation of the right to resist entry based on your interpretation of what's lawful or not lawful, of police officers getting shot. Right. Not good.
Which the Attorney General, who represents the police officers, is not going to allow people to be pushed and shoved, police officers, or pulling a gun on a police officer. Just
and
not going to do it.
The officer was shot.
Yeah.
Moving on, there were some high-profile announcements from congressional candidates this week, including John McGough, who will make a third attempt to unseat fellow Republican Dan Burton in the 5th Congressional District. Luke Messer ran in that district in 2010. This time, Messer will be running in the 6th District, where he hopes to succeed Mike Pence.
I'm a small-town guy. I grew up in Greensburg, Indiana. I live in a small town in Shelbyville, Indiana. I think folks that this district is a district of small towns, 20 counties now, and folks out there feel like that they're not all that well understood in Washington.
Mike McDaniel, is Messer the favorite in the 6th?
I think at this point he is. I think there may be other candidates, but I think what Luke Messer brings to this candidacy is the ability to raise a whole lot of money, and that's going to be very powerful because this new district takes in the Indianapolis television market, the Dayton television market, and the Cincinnati television market, which makes this more expensive than it was before. And so I think having a lot of money in your coffers going into this campaign will be formidable, and I think he brings that to this table.
There are going to be a couple other meaningful candidates in there, Don Bates Jr., who ran for the U.S. Senate,
yep.
Travis Hankins, who came
who ran
close
very well,
in the ninth.
Came in second, a three-way.
But they're both Tea Party guys, right?
Yeah, they could split that vote.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I actually think Luke Messer has one head, which, you know, means he would be a credible moderate candidate.
Again, fake praise.
Bottom line is Republicans will win that seat again.
Yeah, but chances are there could be 13 or 14 candidates by the time they get to the primary. So let's jump to the 5th. McGough, he came in third last time.
Right.
But with Messer in front of him.
Right.
A lot of the competition has been eliminated by redistricting.
You know, I think if it's a one-on-one, McGough has got a real shot. That was his problem last time. That was a problem for all of those candidates last time. There were several credible challengers to the incumbent, and they all split the vote. So I think if it's a one-on-one, it could be an interesting race.
Seven. I think the district works out for him, too. I mean, they made some changes, and they got rid of some of the more northern parts that Dan Burton really excels in, so I think that'll help him as well.
There were so many candidates last time that 7 out of 10 people that voted in that primary voted against the incumbent, and
yeah.
The incumbent won.
Right.
So with the district changes that Nikki's talking about, if it is a one-on-one, this could be a very, very competitive race.
Absolutely. And then the question is, how many candidates does Burton recruit to run against him in that race?
That's a good question.
And again, it'll be a Republican in the 5th.
Yep.
Well, you know, those pendulums can swing, you know. We'll see. We'll see
what
happens.
It doesn't swing in that district.
New district, new day.
All right, before we go, we have to make our annual Indy 500 picks and who's going to win the race.
Simona
Silvestro. And she's from where?
She's from some other country.
Switzerland. Mike's favorite country.
Right.
Mike's who's going to win the race?
That's right. Scott.
Very good.
Dixon.
Very good.
Nikki.
I'm going to go with Dario, and I'm pretty sure they'll give him enough fuel to get through.
Yeah. He hopes.
Dario Franchitti, and that's just because you like Ashley Judd, maybe.
No, I think he'll do the three-peat. I mean,
okay. Oh, mercy. I'm saying Alex Tagliani. I love the idea that Sam Schmidt Motorsports won the pole convincingly. He is a great story. He's a real racer, and I hope that they win.
And he would be winning from the pole. That'd be unusual. I'm actually the Ashley Judd fan in the group.
Shocked.
Yeah, very surprising.
Yeah, I'm going with Dario.
All right.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.